Well, I admit it. I was caught complaining. Earlier this week, I was talking with a friend of mine from the seminary. Well, really, I was complaining about something. I wasn't talking about a specific person or specific event or situation. I was grumbling about a big picture issue that is well beyond my control, much like we might sometimes complain about politics or work or something like that. Just generally being negative. And my friend cut me off with, "Get over yourself." Now, while I was irritated at having been interrupted in what I thought was a perfectly eloquent and rhetorically effective list of complaints, I merely responded, "What do you mean?" He continued, "That mentality, this grumbling, only leads to disappointment, never to edification or a real solution or clarity." Now set aside that little scene for a minute. As you are well aware, we've spent the past few weeks on a brief hiatus from Mark's Gospel, reading instead from the sixth chapter of John's Gospel, the so-called Bread of Life discourse. At the same time, our second reading has been taken from St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians. Now, usually the second reading and the Gospel are not obviously connected. But the first reading and the Gospel are paired to reflect each other, and the second reading often just kind of stands on its own. Interestingly, though, in these couple of weeks, there is a surprising interplay between the Gospel readings about Jesus, the bread of life, and the second reading from the Ephesians. Ephesians reflects how we ought to be changed by an encounter with Jesus, the bread of life. How we ought to be changed by our reception of Holy Communion. St. Paul's message describes what authentic, ongoing conversion looks like. While the response of the crowd to Jesus' discourse reflects inauthentic conversion. Here's what I mean. In John 6, the evangelist does a remarkable job of conveying to us the confusion and even the tension between Jesus and the crowd. Jesus performed a miracle, the multiplication of the loaves and fishes, and then the crowd seemingly forgot about it and demanded that he work a sign so that they might believe. Then Jesus told them not to work for the bread that perishes, but for the eternal bread that comes down from heaven. And the crowd, John tells us, murmured against him. The crowd finds Jesus' sayings hard to understand and thus hard to accept. So we see this back and forth between Jesus and the crowd, Jesus teaching, calling to believe, to deeper conversion, and the crowd pushing back, hesitating, resisting, murmuring. We get the impression that the crowd is hard-headed, stubborn, reticent, struggling to put out into the deep, struggling to trust that what Jesus is saying about the Father and about himself is true and of profound importance for our lives. And their response is to murmur, to grumble. Murmuring or grumbling is an immature way to deal with things we don't understand or don't like or are out of our control. It's generally an exterior manifestation of an interior discontent. Our tendency is to grumble if we don't like something, if things are not going our way, or if we are frustrated or confused, but it's kind of an immature response. It's almost a cowardly response. Rarely does grumbling reflect any desire to actually get things figured out. It usually wants the world to conform itself to us. Murmuring lacks resolve and direction. It's usually just a negative, idle wallowing in our own discontent. Murmuring is not really a response to a problem or a challenging circumstance or message at all. It's just publicly making known, I don't like this because I don't understand it, or I don't like it, or it's just not really my way. That is exactly what the crowd is doing here, and what I was doing with my friend earlier this week. They don't understand Jesus' message, or they don't like it. It makes them uncomfortable, and rather than try to approach it with reverence and an open heart, they murmur, enclosed in themselves. Murmuring cannot lead to conversion in the spiritual life. It really doesn't lead to anything except bitterness and resentment. And murmuring hesitancy and bitterness get us nowhere. They keep us trapped, turned inward, confined to an outlook and a way of life that prevents us from putting off the old and putting on the new, as we've been hearing about in Ephesians. St. Paul, on the contrary, presents us with a different picture. A different picture. A large portion of the letter to the Ephesians is dedicated to describing the life of holiness. What does the life of one who has taken Jesus at his word look like? What does the life of one who has taken Jesus at his word look like? What does it look like to work for the bread that endures forever? What difference does it make to eat the living bread come down from heaven? St. Paul says, "Do not grieve the Holy Spirit. Put away all bitterness and fury. Put away the old self of your former way of life and be renewed in the spirit of your minds. Put on the new self, created in God's way in righteousness and holiness of truth." In the crowd, in the gospel, and in Ephesians, we are shown two different possible ways of responding to Jesus' call to conversion: murmuring hesitancy and resolute, confident commitment to conversion. Last week, Father James talked about how receiving Holy Communion ought to effect something in us. It really does something. It really makes a difference to receive the very God of grace. In receiving Holy Communion, we put off the old self and put on the new self. And the new self continues to emerge as we continue to grow in the image and likeness of Jesus Christ, whose very self we receive in Holy Communion. We strive to become what we have received. And St. Paul describes what that looks like. Be imitators of God as beloved children, and live in love as Christ loved us and handed himself over for us as a sacrificial offering to God for a fragrant aroma, This is authentic conversion. This is what holiness entails. This is what it means to put off the old man and put on the new.